More Idaho Matters from the studios of Boise State Public Radio News. I'm Gemma Gaudette. On Friday, the U.S. Supreme Court allowed Idaho to enforce our state's abortion ban, even in medical emergencies, while the legal fight continues. The justices said they will hear arguments in April, and they put a hold on a lower court ruling that had blocked the Idaho law in hospital emergencies based on a lawsuit that was filed by the Biden administration, where they argued that hospitals that receive Medicare funds are required by federal law to provide emergency care, which could potentially include abortion, no matter if there is a state law banning abortion. So joining us today to help us understand this decision, as well as the implications for doctors and women in Idaho, are McKay Cunningham, the director of on-campus experiential learning at the College of Idaho, and Dr. Sarah Thompson, a local OBGYN. We did extend an invitation to Idaho Attorney General Rahul Labrador to join us today for this discussion, but at this point, we have not received a response from him or anyone in his office. With that said, I want to welcome both of you to the program.
Hi, Gemma.
Hi, Gemma. Thank you for having us.
It's our pleasure to have you on the program. So quickly, just a little bit of history. Idaho's trigger law from 2020 was set to go in effect on August 25th of 22. This was after Roe v. Wade was overturned in June of 22, which meant that anyone who performs or assists in an abortion can be charged and can serve a prison term of up to 5 years. However, the Biden administration stepped in, as I mentioned in the beginning, using a federal law to stop this from happening. So, McKay, can you explain this federal law to us and what it is exactly?
Yeah, the federal law is EMTALA, which stands for Emergency Medical Treatment Labor Act, and it's been around for 40 years or so. And what it requires is for hospitals that receive federal money through Medicare, that they have to provide emergency care services. They've got to provide an emergency room. And EMTALA, this federal statute that's been around for 40 years, more specifically requires hospitals to provide, quote, necessary stabilizing treatment. And as you note, Gemma, at times, necessary stabilizing treatment includes abortion care. So in other words, it's not uncommon for pregnant patients to arrive at an emergency room in Idaho suffering from a non-lethal condition like infections or excess bleeding or preeclampsia, et cetera, for which pregnancy termination is the stabilizing care required to avoid grave harms like strokes, sepsis, kidney failure, and the like. And so EMTALA is a federal statute that says, look, if you're gonna take federal dollars, you have to provide this type of emergency care.
So, McKay, with that said, then this this law then went, I mean, you know, the Biden administration sued, it was able to block Idaho's law. In your legal opinion, was this a strong argument to stand on?
Yeah, I think it's important to note that this lawsuit is not a lawsuit about whether or not to throw out Idaho's abortion law altogether. It's not even a question of constitutionality. The lawsuit is really much more narrow. And the lawsuit is whether there's a conflict between EMTALA, that federal statute, and one small sliver of the Idaho abortion law. Now, Idaho abortion law says, look, it's a near total ban on abortion. Almost never will it be legal to do an abortion in this state. But there's a narrow exception in Idaho's law, and that is an abortion is okay when, quote, necessary to prevent the death of a pregnant woman. And so the lawsuit really boils down to one fairly slender question, and that is whether or not the federal statute that requires stabilizing care conflicts with the Idaho statute that says you can never provide abortion care unless it's necessary to prevent the death of a pregnant woman. And that's the distinction at the heart of the case. Is there a conflict there? Now, Judge Windmill said, yes. Yes, there is a conflict there. Judge Windmill said, quote, the federal law, EMTALA, protects patients not only from imminent death, but also from emergencies that seriously threaten their life. So Judge Windmill found that there was a conflict. The Ninth Circuit supported that finding. The Supreme Court, importantly, the Supreme Court hasn't answered the question yet. Supreme Court has just said, for now, we're going to allow Idaho's law to go forward.
Mm-hmm. So, Dr. Thompson, take us back to June of 2022, when the U.S. Supreme Court in the Dobbs decision effectively overturned Roe versus Wade. I am curious about how that impacted the potential care that you were giving to pregnant people.
Well, our Idaho trigger law didn't go into effect until August. So we had a few months over the summer where we were trying to figure out what this meant for us. And as McKay noted, the U.S. versus Idaho law in August did provide us some more clarity before the trigger law went into effect. And that, I would say, that small carve out that we got with the Judge Windmill decision did give our healthcare teams the clarity and legal security we needed in caring for certain early pregnancy emergencies.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Thompson, you know, I think there is such argument, right, around the life of the mother, and we're seeing this time and time again. There are lawsuits here in Idaho. There are some very well known lawsuits in Texas going on right now, where women are suing these states. Basically because they could not access the necessary abortion care that they believed would potentially cause their own death. I would have to assume that this must be very difficult from a medical standpoint, because you are the medical professional and yet you are not able to, in a lot of ways, fulfill the oath that you've taken as doctors to do no harm.
Yes, this has been a very sad and frustrating time to be an obstetrician in our state. You know, the law is written in these black and white terms, but in medicine, we often practice in areas of gray. And it's not always easy, as you noted, to separate the risk to the woman's health and the risk for death, as this, that exists on a continuum. So, Gemma, if you imagine a straight line with healthy being on one end and dying being on the other and sickness somewhere in the middle, as physicians, we're trained to intervene when we recognize sickness and not just watch an illness until death approaches. That's just bad medicine, and that can be malpractice. You know, there are so many examples in medicine where timely intervention is critical to a good outcome. Most people know that you need timely treatment for a stroke or a heart attack to have a good outcome. And the same thing is true for pregnancy. We need to be able to intervene in a timely fashion to have good outcome for our patients. And a lot of us feel that this exception to prevent death is just too narrow. And that's why we've had some feeling of security when we had the federal EMTALA obligation that we knew we were following. And with that gone, that clarity is lost for us.
What is that like now? As you said, the clarity is lost for you. But I mean, in so many ways, your hands are once again tied as to how do you help a patient who needs necessary medical care, and at times that means an abortion.
Well, with the EMTALA injunction removed, I anticipate there's going to be more delays in care, as physicians in our state worry and consult attorneys about what's legally allowable. And I think there's going to be more pregnant women who are transferred out of state for the care they need. And women experiencing a health emergency in pregnancy and receiving a devastating diagnosis about what's happening to her and her baby are already going to be having, you know, such a terrible time. And now that's going to be made even worse if we have to transfer her out of state for the care she needs. Having to leave Idaho means she's going to have to suffer her pregnancy loss in an unfamiliar city, not surrounded by her family and friends. And she may also incur an increased financial burden, as well as the emotional trauma and feeling abandoned and shamed by her home state during this very vulnerable time. And we worry, too, that this is going to have a disproportionate impact on people in our community who already have barriers to healthcare.
Yeah. Well, and Dr. Thompson, I think of women even with high-risk pregnancies, right? When there's a case now that this has been, EMTALA that has been revoked at this point, even in high-risk pregnancies, if you have the means, because as you mentioned, this is also where we see the impact, right? Is if you have the means, you potentially would have to go out of state for care just in case something were to happen, I would think.
Yeah, I've been hearing that from patients and from patients' families that they're scared to be pregnant in Idaho right now. And that's just such a sad state of affairs.
Mm-hmm. So, McKay, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals agreed with the Biden administration's argument back in 22, as we mentioned. And so they blocked that law from taking effect until the Ninth Circuit made a ruling in the case. But as I mentioned, just on Friday, the U.S. Supreme Court intervened and basically put a hold on this until they hear arguments in April. Why in certain cases does the Supreme Court do this? Because they don't always intervene when a case is going through the judicial system.
That's a good point, Gemma. The Ninth Circuit upheld the temporary blocking of that one part of Idaho's abortion law with regard to the imminent death or necessary to protect the death of a pregnant woman. And the Ninth Circuit was going to hear the case on the merits, but then Idaho's Attorney General Raul Labrador asked the Supreme Court to intervene, and they did. I think that it's always dangerous to predict what the court will do, but the fact that the court not only took the case, but also decided to remove the stay, remove the temporary stay of Idaho, of the enforcement of Idaho's abortion law, I think gives a signal that the court probably feels that the state of Idaho, Raul Labrador, have a pretty strong argument to suggest that EMTALA does not, in fact, conflict and should not supersede Idaho's abortion statute.
McKay, when the U.S. Supreme Court on Friday intervened in this case, did they give any reasoning as to why they decided to allow this to move forward instead of just leaving everything the way it is until they hear the arguments in April?
No, there's very, very little written about it. It was not a long writing or opinion. So no, we don't have a lot to go on as to the reason why the court decided to undo the Ninth Circuit and Judge Windmill's stay. Although I will say that there's a parallel case out of the Fifth Circuit that was decided down in New Orleans that came to the opposite result. So I think that at least some commentators can say that the court may have been looking at both of those cases at the same time and just for now decided to side with the Court of Appeals from the Fifth Circuit.
So As I said in the beginning of our conversation, we did invite the Attorney General or someone from his office to join us for this conversation. We have not heard from them. They did, though, release a general statement after the Supreme Court intervened on Friday. And so I do want to read this statement from Attorney General Raul Labrador. He says, quote, "We are very pleased and encouraged by the Supreme Court's decision today. The federal government has been wrong from day one. Federal law does not preempt Idaho's Defense of Life Act. In fact, EMTALA and Idaho's law share the same goal, to save the lives of all women and their unborn children. Today, the Supreme Court's decision is a big step in stopping the administration's lawless overreach. The people of Idaho have spoken with clarity on the issue of life," unquote. McKay, in your legal opinion, was the federal government wrong to try and use this defense? I asked earlier if it was a strong defense, but was there something else maybe they could have done?
No, and I think that it's a very it's a strong, it's a colorable legal argument. It's certainly not baseless. It's certainly not specious. It is a very strong government argument. And there's a whole body of law throughout our jurisprudence called preemption law, and it's just based on when you have a federal statute that conflicts with a state statute. If there's a conflict there, the Constitution says that the federal law prevails. And so it's definitely not a specious argument. It's a good argument. I think, Gemma, that in large part what Labrador is arguing is an argument that has won the day at the U.S. Supreme Court with some frequency, and that's an argument about state sovereignty. Labrador is saying, hey, look, this is Idaho's statute. And when you, Supreme Court, overturned Roe versus Wade, you gave back to the states the ability to create laws around abortion without interference from the federal government and the federal judiciary. We're asking you to please do so again. Here we have an Idaho statute with regard to abortion, and you're saying, Biden administration, that this federal statute chips away at it. And Labrador is asking the Supreme Court to say this is a state sovereignty issue. Therefore, please do not limit in any way our state's prerogative as manifested through this abortion statute.
And Dr. Thompson, I want to go back to part of that statement from the Attorney General where he said, quote, to save In fact, EMTALA and Idaho's law share the same goal, to save the lives of all women and their unborn children, unquote. With that said, there feels at times as if there are certain individuals, lawmakers, anti-abortion activists who are so pro-life that they are actually willing to let women suffer and die, because there is such shades of gray, Dr. Thompson, in protecting the life of the mother. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but is that, in your medical opinion, accurate in this idea of this argument of what is the life of the mother and what that is worth?
Yeah, you know, I've heard our legislators in interviews talk about deciding between the life of the mother and the life of the baby. And I think it's important for listeners to understand that that's really a false choice that we almost never encounter in clinical practice. The choice in the situations we face are typically that we're going to lose the baby versus we're going to lose the baby and have serious health consequences or lose the mom's life. Because the prognosis for the baby in these complex situations has already been set into motion by her pregnancy complication. So we need to be able to intervene to protect, not just, you know, prevent the mom's death, but also protect her health. Because if we wait until she's already close to death, we may not be able to intervene in a way that can save her. And that really puts women's lives at risk. I think, go ahead.
No, please go ahead.
You know, there have been example cases in other states and in the world where I think this kind of death exception has been problematic. And I would hate to see history repeat itself here. There's a well-documented case in Ireland when abortion was still illegal there. The patient's name was Savita Halapanavar. And she had her water break at 17 weeks. She went to the hospital and she was not offered an abortion there because the baby's heart was still beating. And during her hospitalization, the baby was ultimately stillborn and she died of sepsis at the age of 31. Mm. And an investigation of her care showed that lack of legal clarity about when a termination was allowed contributed to her death. And that's exactly the problem we could have here in Idaho. And I don't think our legislators should wait until we have a tragedy like Savita's in our own state before they change the law. I mean, I know we're talking about waiting for a Supreme Court decision, but in the interval, our legislative session is starting now. And if we could get additional clarity in our law and have a maternal health exception, that would make potentially a big difference for the lives of pregnant Idahoans.
Because Dr. Thompson, I would have to think that as you as a doctor to have to sit there in a case like you just mentioned in Ireland and wait, right? Knowing that you could save the life of the mother. I mean, I can't imagine what that must feel like that you have to think about those scenarios.
Yes, and that's where the EMTALA clarification was quite helpful for us because the EMTALA clarification told us we needed to stabilize a patient's health and not just prevent death. So that's the important distinction. So, you know, in this example I was talking about with early rupture of membranes, if a pregnant woman's water breaks very early in the second trimester, the baby's almost certainly going to be lost and not survive to a gestational age where life-saving resuscitation can be offered. And many people would consider this a miscarriage in progress, but in Idaho, if the baby still has a heartbeat, inducing or augmenting her labor is considered an abortion. But the national standard of care is to offer immediate delivery in this situation because of the serious risks. And the Secretary Becerra of the Department of Health and Human Services provided clarity in May that this particular situation with early ruptured membranes before viability counts as an emergency medical condition. So we were able to really use that in clarifying what we could do. And I think now with this change that just leaves us in this area of uncertainty and can cause hesitation for physicians on when they feel like they can intervene.
Well, I want to thank both of you for taking time today to talk with us about this, in particular to just give us more clarity on this moving forward since it impacts so many Idahoans. So thank you both for the conversation today.
Thank you, Gemma.
Thank you for having us.
We've been talking with McKay Cunningham, the director of on-campus experiential learning at the College of Idaho, along with Dr. Sarah Thompson, a local OBGYN. We've been talking about the U.S. Supreme Court intervening on the Emtala case here in Idaho. We did extend an invitation to Idaho Attorney General Raul Labrador to join us for the discussion today. At this point, we have not received a response from him or anyone in his office. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
This new year, LifeKit wants to help you succeed because everyone needs a little help being human.
It can seem so overwhelming. You're not alone.
Who can I commit to being?
If you want to do something, then just do it. Just take that first step.
Great advice every week. Listen to LifeKit from NPR.